I will call the meeting to order. We don't have a quorum, so we can't move Representative Zuchowski's bill, but thankfully, he's here. And so we will hear his bill and move it and amend it as he wishes when we have a quorum. And Representative Zuchowski, I know that you have a delete everything amendment, so why don't you just tell us about that, and we'll get the bill in order as soon as we get enough members.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I believe there are some folks from St. Charles coming up. On, expect them at any moment now. But this, should I talk about the bill generally or the amendment, Madam Chair?
Why don't you, Representative, talk about it generally, including the amendment. Talk about the bill as if it were amended.
Okay, thank you. Members, this bill will take the... last year in the bonding bill, there was an appropriation to the school district in St. Charles to provide them with declining pupil aid due to the April 2009 fire that took out the largest employer in St. Charles, North Star Foods, that had about 240 employees that burned it to the ground. So the declining pupil aid bill last year provided for up to $242,000 per year in aid for the biennium to the school district for any loss of pupils that they would realize at the rate of 5,000, well, you guys know what the number is, 5,300 or something like Mr. Crow helped us out last year, per pupil. So that bill was signed into law, and we are anticipating that not all of the credit, if you will, or the limit of what was provided in the bonding bill is going to be used. As a matter of fact, there's not a lot of students that have left St. Charles. I don't have an absolute number, but early indications from the superintendent there were that it wasn't, I think they had originally thought that it was somewhere in the neighborhood, if I'm trying to remember correctly, 75 students or something that they based the original estimate on, and it's not going to come, probably not going to come close to that. At the same time, we did last year also make an attempt to get some city aid for the city of St. Charles, which that bill got tied up in the House tax bill, and it's still sitting there wherever that is. So that bill did not move through the legislature, and there is a very very strong precedence for helping cities in that type of situation. So what I saw in the interim as I talked to the superintendent and city officials was a creative idea that would take the remaining credit, Madam Chair, from the declining pupil aid from last year and transfer any unused balance to the city. That's essentially what this bill intended to do. Since the bill was drafted, we have had another budget forecast in which for the first of the 2 years of the biennium, the budget forecast actually decreased that authorized amount from $242,000 to, I believe, $190,000. And so I have a delete all amendment that will bring things in line with the budget forecast and bring the bill back to being budget neutral as it was before, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Pruskowski. And now we do have a quorum. So did you have someone to move your bill, or would you like me to move it?
I haven't identified anyone, but
I will move House File 2887 for possible inclusion, and then I will move the DE1 amendment. Any questions on the amendment? Representative Druskowski has described it for us. All in favor of the DE1 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted. And now questions on the bill. Representative Druskowski, the information I had was actually that there weren't any students that left for this declining pupil enrollment. You don't have the exact number, though?
I do not. Last I heard from the superintendent, Madam Chair, was four, but it's
four.
I don't know exactly. It's been a couple of weeks since I talked to him, so he expects that could change between now and the end of the year. I wouldn't expect it's going to be a change of 10 or anything like that, but.
So 75 estimated, and we do always, you know, have money for disasters, and but only four left. And now the question is, do we want, in fact, actually I made the motion for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill, but if we should be interested in this bill, it would have to go to taxes. And so, members, we have to vote on this bill. So if there are any questions, now is the time to ask them. Representative Depke, and then Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Drazkowski, could you give me an idea of what the city is looking to do with the funding for this school?
Representative Drazkowski, and now your testifier's here, and we only have about five more minutes for this bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Depke. With me is Nick Coverman, who is the city administrator in St. Charles, and we've got a little less than 5 minutes, Nick.
Madam Chairman, thank you for your time. I do have a presentation.
And if you could please identify yourself for the tape, your name and your title.
Yes. My name is Nick Coverman, and I'm the city administrator for the city of St. Charles. We have been working on a plan for about a year to try and bring back North Star Foods, which was our largest employer, of about 250 people. When we learned in January that they weren't coming back, we felt there was still value to the plan and the partners that we were able to pull together. One of those partners was the school district. And the past legislation that was approved looked to bring back or maintain those pupil units for St. Charles, because the greatest fear was that we were going to lose those families. And what we were surprised to see was that because St. Charles is a diverse community and welcoming, and has been for about three decades, that a lot of those families stay because of the school district. And so in working with the superintendent and Representative Drazkowski, they agreed that it was in the best interest to use those funds to help bring back the jobs to try and keep those families and those students in St. Charles.
And I'm going to stop you right there, because this is not the tax committee, and so jobs would not be
right.
The issue here. We're talking about students. And members, I am going to change my motion again to laying it over for possible inclusion. Apparently, Representative Lencheski is not interested at this time in seeing the bill, and so we can discuss that with her and find out if she is. We'll take one more question, and then we have to have a closing statement. Representative
Benson. Right. Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe I would ask the chair or staff a little history on this. This seems unusual to be transferring school funds to a municipality, and I'm just wondering if there's any history for having done this in the past.
Thank you, Representative Benson. It seems unusual to me, too, that declining pupil enrollment is for declining pupils, and if there aren't any, then that's the end of the story for this committee. But as far as what happens with funding in disasters, we do sometimes fund cities, but that's done in the tax committee. So perhaps Representative Marquardt would care to, since he's on the property tax committee, would care to comment. Representative Marquardt.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And we have in the past given increases in local government aid for either permanently or over a course of a few years or so. But I thought last year in the tax bill that did pass, there were some dollars for St. Charles.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Marquardt, there was a sales tax exemption for North Star Foods should they rebuild. They did not rebuild.
Okay.
And so that it was estimated that would be up to $2.1 million in exemption for sales tax, but obviously that's not going to be used by the business.
Madam Chair, I mean, I would be interested if this was to be dollars going to cities. I would be interested to see this bill then. I mean, it would have to come
right,
my way, because, you know, we're dealing with the, you know, cities and disparity and the whole work. So
Representative Marquardt, would you like us to send it to finance so it's there and you can discuss it further rather than laying it over in this committee?
Madam Chair, would be finance
without
or taxes?
A recommendation. It would go to finance to be re-referred to taxes.
Yeah, I mean, I just think when you're looking at local units of government, that should be a tax issue, Madam Chair.
Okay, so Representative Marquardt is asking us, and I guess I would make, change my motion to send it to Finance without recommendation. So any further discussion on that motion? Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Are these actually education dollars, or the research says these are bonding proceeds? Is there a difference, a stipulation that these are not actually education dollars?
Mr. Crow.
Madam Chair, members, the appropriation is actually general fund and general fund dollars. It's not, it just was in the bonding bill, but it was a general fund direct appropriation, so it's not bond money, and so it's actually part of the general education appropriation for St. Charles for the school district.
Hey, I renew my motion then that House File 2887 be returned to Finance without recommendation, and all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Same sign. Motion prevails. And the motion passes. Thank you, Representative Jaskowski, and thank you, Mr. Overman, for driving all the way from St. Charles this morning.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Okay. Representative Huntley. And members, we asked Chair Huntley to come to this committee because the Department of Human Services technical bill includes some provisions that affect special education. And so we're here to mainly just ask questions about that, and so we can understand that. And then we will return the bill to Finance. So Representative Huntley, welcome.
Pleasure to be here, Madam Chair. There's one sentence in this bill that pertains to the Education Department, and it relates to medical assistance payments to school districts for services rendered to the kids with disabilities that make them eligible for medical assistance. And I'll let the department explain this one sentence. It's starts on page 2 and ends at the top of page 3.
Thank you very much. And members, it's line 2.36 and 3.1 and 2. Welcome, Ms. Castellano.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Susan Castellano, and I'm with the Department of Human Services. And just by way of background, we pay for IEP services for children enrolled in medical assistance, and this is a source of funding for the school districts to cover special education costs. This particular section deals with how we set those rates, and what adding this sentence does is essentially two things. We have one instance in which a school outside of the state of Minnesota has requested payment for a student who is a resident of Minnesota. This legislation was intended to benefit Minnesota school districts and never envisioned trying to pay for children who are outside of the state. Nor does MDE have any cost information for children outside the state. So one thing that this language does is make sure that we aren't obligated to pay for children in Nevada, for example. The other thing that this language does is stipulate that we will only pay for services that are in distinct service categories. Occasionally, because a child's in placement, some costs are incurred that don't come through the normal data routes, for lack of a better term, at MDE, and we are not able to capture those costs and create a rate with them. So essentially, it codifies the way things already work.
So, Ms. Castellano, then it would not cover students from other states, and it would keep things the way it is, so there would be no decrease in costs for school districts?
No. The other thing I will mention is that what it does not do, for example, in the Fargo-Moorhead area, if Moorhead were contracting with a physical therapist in Fargo, as long as that cost is incurred by a district in our state, it still qualifies to be covered.
So one last question, if any others have questions. Is there any category, what would be the sorts of things that wouldn't be covered?
Well, as I said, we did have one request from, I believe it was Wyoming, actually. Families sent their child to a school in Wyoming, and the school in Wyoming was hoping to get some funding from us. That didn't work out. The other example is a placement that's outside the state. There have been several placements outside the state where a Minnesota district has placed a child in a facility that's not in the state of Minnesota, those costs are not something we're able to pull in. They don't. Those costs don't aren't sent to MDE, and so they're not costs we can use to set the rate.
So they are all examples that are other in other states. Your distinct service categories don't exclude anything for Minnesota students.
No, no.
Any other questions from anybody? Thank you very much, Representative Huntley. Come back and stay longer next time. I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm used to laying things over. I will renew my motion that House File 3237 be returned to be passed and returned to finance. All in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails and the amendment passes. Thank you, Representative Huntley. Representative Mariani isn't here, so we'll go to Representative, I think we'll do Representative Newton's first bill. And then if Representative Mariani comes back, we'll give you a rest, and if not, you can do the second bill. So, Representative Newton, you can move your bill.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, the bill I'm introducing is House File 2867.
And Representative Newton moves House File 2867 for possible inclusion. Representative Newton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have an amendment to the bill, but I also have a minor word change on it that has been agreed to by the parties.
Okay, and Representative Newton, is the word change in your bill or your amendment?
It's in the bill.
In the bill. What would you like to take first?
Let's do the word change first, Madam Chair. It's on line 2-5.
Okay, page 2, line 5. Representative Newton, what was the word change?
It's before the word until, if we would add from birth.
Add from birth?
From birth, before the word until.
Okay, members, on line 2.5 of the bill, before until, we're adding from birth. If no one objects, Representative Newton incorporates that. And then your A3 amendment.
The A3 amendment, Madam Chair, is on the special education report. This, too, is to my knowledge, has no, is not controversial.
So Representative Newton moves the A3 amendment. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you. And Madam Chair, I'm noticing that we came in under the 24-hour deadline for this, which I'm not going to raise an objection to right now. I'm just wondering if the author has any idea on what the cost of the report is. Yesterday on the House floor, when we had amendments on reports, we were held to a pretty strict standard on cost, and I'm wondering if you've talked with the department about this, if they can absorb it or if there's a negligible amount.
Representative Newton.
Madam Chair and Representative Garofalo, I have asked for a some information from the Department of Education as to what the cost would be for the bill, and I haven't heard anything. I don't anticipate there's going to be any cost, although, as you mentioned, that we heard on the floor that costs do pop up.
But let's ask if there's anyone, since this amendment did come in after deadline and we did have the question from our lead Republican, if there's anyone from the department who would like to comment. Welcome, Ms. Barnage.
Madam Chair, representatives of the committee, my name is Lisa Barnage and I'm with the Department of Education. We have discussed just a little bit with the department or our program, not program compliance, our compliance and division on this. This is definitely things that they already have to make determinations on, so the cost would be minimal. However, I'm not for sure that the department would say that we could absorb the costs.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm not going to raise objections with cost or anything. I just want members to be aware of the difference in the discussion we had on the floor and the difference we're having in committee today. At one point, reports cost money, and today, reports don't cost money. But I'm cool with this going forward today. Thanks.
Representative Garofalo, you know, that's the way with fiscal notes, too. Departments want to do them. They absorb the cost. If not, they don't. So they must be okay with this amendment, is my guess.
Yeah. And Madam Chair, never mind. That's fine.
All right. Representative Newton, to your bill as amended.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, the bill essentially mandates that school districts have a responsibility to provide special education services to a child with a disability until that child becomes 21 or receives a high school diploma, whichever comes first. It also directs that the school districts continue to serve a child with a disability who becomes 21 years old during the school year until the last day of the school year, or the child receives a standard high school diploma, whichever comes first. It defines school year, and it also directs school districts to identify and evaluate children with a disability in the school district who are in need of special education. There is also a controversial section to this bill, and I know there's opposition to it.
Really?
And that is on lines 229 through 224, and I'm sure there are individuals, I know Mr. Noel and others, who would like to speak to that. It's important for me that we have the first part of the bill, and if members decide that they don't like this last section, subsection E, I'd like to have that somehow separated out so we can vote on that separately. But the other part of the bill has been agreed to by MSBA and all of the interest groups, NAMI, PACER, and all of those.
And Representative Newton, we're not voting today, so we would just lay the whole bill over for possible inclusion. But then when we get around to marking up the bill, we could decide what to put in. So MSBA, NAMI, and PACER agree with the whole bill? Or everything?
No, they're neutral. They're neutral on the bottom portion of the section E.
So MSBA supports the whole bill. NAMI and PACER are neutral on the last section?
MSBA is neutral on the last section as well.
They're all neutral on the last section. Okay.
And I know Mr. Noel and others would like to speak to the section E.
Okay. Any questions from members before we go to testimony? Mr. Noel. Welcome to the committee, and of course, please identify yourself.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Pete Noel, Minnesota Catholic Conference. This is kind of a new revelation to me, so I can maybe divert a little bit from my planned testimony and just say that it is, in fact, Section E that we would object to. The rest of the bill is, you know, would be acceptable to us. So,
and Mr. Noel, I think it would be good, though, to give us the reasons for your objection just briefly because we aren't making any decision today and we should hear your general objections.
Very good. Well, you know, and we've stated this before, but for the sake of this particular bill, in our view, this would diminish or, you know, any diminishment or elimination of special education benefits to children attending non-public schools, especially when it comes to the state and local funding for that. It rolls it back to about 20% of the total investment that's currently being made to provide services to parentally placed children in non-public schools. We think that would be absolutely catastrophic and cause many of the programs to actually diminish to the point where the students would have to transfer from their school of choice, which the parents have decided is the best venue for those children to attend for their total education, including the special education. Plus it would, in our view at least, and this has yet to be proven, I realize, but that it could actually add to the tax burden, add to the deficit, in the sense that if these children, let's say half of the 3,000 or so children have to transfer to a public school, nothing against public schools, that's not the idea here at all. It's that it would add general fund costs to the total.
Thank you. And Mr. I think we are familiar with that argument, but I wanted to hear was, so you're saying that this section is lowering the standard for private school students to the federal standard,
yes,
and that would be 20% of
correct
current funding. So Minnesota
correct
enhances the special ed for private schools by 80%.
For which we're very appreciative in the non-public sector.
Thank you. Mr. Field, do you have anything new to say? We don't want to hear the same arguments because we doesn't sound like this bill is progressing forcefully this section. Mr.
Thank you. Field. Jim Field, I'm president of the Minnesota Independent School Forum. There's just a couple of things I could maybe add to that. One is that if the child doesn't get the special needs services, there's a possibility, there's probably a 40% possibility that the child will eventually transfer to the public school, at least by high school. Half of the kids that start in kindergarten private school end up in the public school by grade 12. The kindergarten class is 8,000, the 12th grade class is 4,000. So you have some children who need special needs services. They go to the private school and they don't get served right. They fall down on their skills, and then when they transfer to the public school, they have a lot of extra cost in catching up with the other special need kids. The other thing I'd like to say is that it doesn't seem right somehow that this amendment or what you're doing in this committee is picking on those kids that are really mostly in need. Kind of puts you in the position of having two kids with special need, obviously special need needs, and you say, well, you go to the private school, you're not going to get served. it'll cause a big havoc in the school system. I don't think it'll be a payoff for the public schools.
Thank you very much. Thanks to both of you. Hanukkah Shagalow. Welcome, and there's someone with you who's not on the list, so he'll have to identify himself, but please identify yourself for the tape.
Good morning, Chair Greiling, members of the committee. I think what I bring to...
And if you could restate your name and title for the record.
Can you tell that I don't usually do this in the morning? My name is Hannah Shagalow. I'm the program director of Sha'arim. Sha'arim means gateways, and it's the centralized agency for Jewish children with special needs in the Twin Cities. We help to coordinate special education services for children in grades K through 12 in our community schools who are diagnosed with special needs. I have copies of my testimony, and I'd also just like to say what I probably bring to the table today is I'm not a professional lobbyist, so bear with me if I'm a little nervous, but I am. I work with families and children on a daily basis, and usually at 8:30 in the morning I'm not here. I'm at school greeting lots of our children. Today I'm here as the voice and advocate of these students diagnosed with special needs that we work with in our Sha'arim program. I'm here in opposition of House File 2867, First Engrossment. This bill seeks to deprive non-public school students of state and local special education benefits that they now receive. This bill will directly impact the students in our program and will be the cause of many of our parents having to choose between keeping their children in a community school or enrolling them in the local school district. In the local district school. Working with these families and children on a daily basis, I recognize the great importance that community plays in the lives of these children. As they grow into young adulthood, many of them do not have the ability to create a sense of community for themselves. Their community schools are where they gain their sense of belonging. Many parents choose a community school for that reason. When we opened our doors of Sha'arim 11 years ago, we envisioned a program that would help create a partnership between our community schools and the local district schools where both partners would support the education of our children with special needs. We recognized that our community schools could not provide for all the needs of the students, but working together with the district school, the students would benefit from both sides. We could provide these children with some of the special education services they so desperately needed, but certainly not all of it, while keeping them in their communities. And the local school district could provide another piece of their academic special education needs. Our students are already at somewhat of a disadvantage when they have to leave their community school to travel daily by bus to the local district school to receive their special education services. They lose precious time and transport when they are already struggling with academics and social integration. However, parents continue to make that choice because they are trying to balance all areas of their child's life. their educational life and the challenges it presents, and a need for a sense of belonging in a community. So for us, this is not about non-public school versus public school children. The children I represent are all Minnesota children, and this committee is responsible for each and every one of their educations. Every child diagnosed with a special need in the state of Minnesota, regardless of the address of the school they are attending, deserve an equal opportunity to learn, grow, and be successful in school. Each one of the children I represent struggles on a daily basis to learn to read, write, communicate, socialize appropriately, and feel overall success in school. By drastically cutting state funds to these children, all children of the state of Minnesota, it puts them at a disadvantage simply because of the address of the school they are attending. In Shireen, we cannot do it alone. We formed our centralized agency to create a partnership where we would shoulder this responsibility together. Each child in the state deserves an equal chance. Many of our parents will have no choice but to place their student in the local district school if state funding is taken away from our non-public school children diagnosed with a special need. As the voice and advocate of these families, the outcome of this bill would be a disadvantage to everyone. Thank you very much for your time and for carefully considering our views.
Thank you very much. You testify like a pro. So is there, and then is the gentleman with you wanting to say anything or not? No. Okay, thank you very much. And if you have copies. She did the job. Okay. Do you have something for the pages to pass out?
Is this the
pass? Yeah. Okay. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify for or against the bill? All right. And Representative Morgan?
Pass.
Any other questions from members? Any closing statement from Representative Newton?
Madam Chair, just briefly, there's no intent in this bill to deprive children of special education. They'd still be provided special education. The only thing we're asking for is that our school districts not subsidize private schools with special education.
And Representative Newton, this bill, like Representative Mariani's bill that we're hearing, and like a lot of bills that, because we're at a finite amount of money, are whatever is funded, then something else is less funded. That's just the way it is with finite pots of money. So appreciate the discussion. And with that, then, House File 2867 is laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you, Representative Newton.
Do you want me to continue?
Willis, are you all set up to continue?
Yes.
Okay, why don't you do that then, or move your second bill?
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. My second bill is 3487, and I'd like to have that held over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Representative Newton moves the House File 3487 be laid over for possible inclusion, and you have an amendment. And Representative Garofalo, is this one you have a concern about moving?
Why don't you go through the amendment first?
Okay. Representative Newton, the amendment.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I have the H3487DE1 amendment, which is a delete all amendment, and the purpose of this amendment is to specify how many days we have before we have a parent's objection to a conciliation conference.
Representative Garofalo, would it be helpful to hear from Mr. Lundell, or are you okay with moving the amendment?
Madam Chair, I'm okay with moving the amendment.
All right. Representative Newton moves the DE1 amendment. Mr. Lundell.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Brad Lundell here today on behalf of Minnesota Administrators of Special Education. The reason for the bill that was heard in the policy committee a while back is that there's just some cleanup language from the work that Representative Newton so ably did last year on reconciling state rule, federal law, that whole review of where we stood in Minnesota. What this amendment does is it clarifies that a district would have 2 days to offer a conciliation, 2 business days to offer conciliation to a parent of a child that would need special or would qualify for special education services, and then the district would have to hold the conciliation conference within 10 days of the parent's notification or accepting of the notification. The reason for it is the language prior that was was adopted last year made it unclear whether or not the district had to hold a conciliation conference, even though a parent may have refused conciliation. So what we're clarifying here is that the district must offer conciliation, if the, and when the parent accepts the offer of conciliation, they've got 10 days then to they must, within 10 days, convene the conciliation conference.
Very good. Any questions on the amendment? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Any questions on the bill as amended?
Madam Chair.
Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair and to the author, we might be getting out of session early this year, so I'm seeing that the effective date is the date following enactment. And maybe just as this bill moves forward, maybe we just want to make it forward for next year's school year so we don't have schools trying to change the regulations at the end of the school year. You don't need to change anything now, but just something to consider as this bill moves forward.
Representative Newton.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Garofalo. And do you know something we don't know?
Madam Chair.
Representative Garofalo.
Representative Newton, I don't know what you don't know.
And what we all don't know is a lot. Okay, any questions on the bill as amended? Any testimony? Any closing statement?
No, Madam Chair. Mr. Lundell covered everything. Thank you.
Representative Newton renews his motion that House File 3487, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in omnibus bill with looking at the date as we go forward. All in favor say aye. Or no, never mind. We're just voting, moving it over. Yeah. Okay. Representative Mariani, it's hard to do these morning meetings.
Yes, it is.
And you're up, by the way.
Madam Chair, I usually sleepwalk through the first hour. Yeah. 8:30 meetings.
I'm finding that that's a good idea.
Madam Chair, I would move the House File 3404 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus K-12 Finance Bill.
Representative Mariani moves House File 3404 for possible inclusion. And Representative Mariani, do you want to take your amendment first?
Yes, Madam Chair, I would move the A2 amendment. This amendment is language that reflects discussion between the school and their advocates and the Department of Education, which they can explain it better, but basically just adjusts the rate and the amount to be impacted in terms of the accelerated payments to their school.
And Representative Garofalo will note that this is late, too. Members, we have never had so many late amendments in the time I've been the chair, and I think it's indicative of the pace of this session and the fact that everything is going so fast and furiously, and we have running out of hearing time. So, Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair, we are... The minority party is here to help out, so we have no objections.
We like your helpfulness. All right, then, did you want to testify to the amendment or the bill?
To the amendment.
Okay, if you could please identify yourself.
Sure. Then. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Diane Sherwood. I am the school administrator at Metro Deaf School of Minnesota North Star Academy. I want to thank Representative Mariani for being the chief author of House File 3404. And to Representative Biskins and all the other authors who signed on to this important piece of legislation. The bill will help the only 100% charter, special education charter school in the state to survive.
And I'm just wondering if you're testifying to the bill rather than the amendment.
We're acting on the amendments.
Yes.
You still are?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Sorry, proceed.
I'm sorry. I'm a newbie to this. I am a founder and one of the school administrators at Metro Deaf School Minnesota North Star Academy, as I said before. We serve a deaf and hard of hearing student population from the greater Twin City area and western Wisconsin. Metro Deaf School opened in 1993, and in 2004, Minnesota North Star Academy, which is also serving deaf and hard of hearing students, was established. That school was partially funded by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and during the 2008-2009 school year, the boards of both schools decided to merge in order to become more cost-effective. We currently serve approximately 100 students, preschool through 12th grade, from 39 school districts. I'm here today because of the cash flow problem that needs legislation to be resolved. Prior to 2006, the school could easily manage its cash flow. Residence districts were billed directly, and the school was paid with relatively few glitches. We were able to utilize a small line of credit to maintain our cash flow. Since 2007, the billing process has changed because the state law has centralized the process, and we bill MDE. We have to appeal to get some of our costs covered. The change has resulted in the school having more difficulty with cash flow. This year, we had a $500,000 delay in payment during the first 6 months of the 2010 school year. This, in combination with the 27% shift, caused a cash flow crisis, and we had to take out a $700,000 line of credit. Yesterday, we had a meeting with the MDE to deal with the problems related to the appeals process and develop a plan to improve the billing and reimbursement system that we both believe will lead to more regular payments. The cash flow problem remains for the 27% shift plus fluctuations that may occur with reimbursements in the appeal process. We have no capacity to build a reserve fund to manage cash flow because of our funding model. We need legislation because charter schools cannot levy for additional funds. More than 84% of our students are placed there by their resident district. And with only 16% of the students parent placed, less than 2.7% of our revenue is general education aid. The cost of paying for loan fees and 6% interest on our line of credit is not sustainable. None of these costs are reimbursable, and since these interest payments are not reimbursable, they are funds that are diverted away from our educational mission. We're in good standing with the MDE. We provide our students with a communication-rich environment, and our students are succeeding. In fact, researchers make requests to study what we do. We are seen as a model for the rest of the country, yet our school could close in the future because of our cash flow crisis. Without a change in the law, the school will no longer be able to exist, and this would be devastating to our students, our families, our staff, and to the school districts we serve who place students with us because of their substantial cost in replicating the program. Please support House File 3404 to allow us to effectively manage our cash flow and to let our school continue to do the good work that it's doing.
Thank you very much. And your testimony was to the bill. We do have the amendment before us. So, Representative Mariani.
Chair, very quickly, the amendment then limits this accelerated payment to the special ed forwarding from the department. And that was language worked out between the department in terms of how we structure it here for consideration.
Very good. Any questions on the amendment? Representative Deputy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Mariani, is this limited to a certain period of time? In other words, is it for the next 2 years, 3 years? I haven't read the bill, so I'm...
Representative Deputy, you're on the bill, too. Let's stick to the amendment. I think if members don't have any questions on the amendment, we will vote on the A2 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes, or motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted. To the bill now, Representative Deputy.
Yes. I'd just like to repeat my question, please.
Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, I don't see a timeline in the bill language. I think this is intended to be a long-term solution.
Representative Deputy.
One other. As Representative Greiling said earlier, when we take from one, we give to another when there's a limited pot of money. Is this a significant, do you see this as continually a special then arrangement for this particular school, and is it going to continue then to shift funds as we put this shift possibly into law or continue the shift for the other schools? Is this something that's going to affect the other schools?
Sure.
Representative Mariani, you could answer, and then also we will, maybe this is a good time to have Mr. Strom go through the handouts that we have. But Representative Mariani.
Yeah, Madam Chair, it's a good question. There are several questions there. And, of course, one minor question here is, what's the immediate impact in terms of delaying then the payments to other schools? And there is a handout here, and we can certainly have staff walk through that. In terms of the long-term impact, and here I'm kind of stretching, I'll probably depend on our fiscal staff here, but I think that part of the reality, of course, is compounded by the current situation where we've delayed payments through a couple of processes over the last couple of years. My assumption is that once we get back on track, with this language, we would still continue with that, but the impact would probably be less because those other schools are not being hit by that universal, pushing forward. That's probably a muddled answer, and so I'm going to ask for help from our fiscal staff on this.
Thank you very much, Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, members,
Just real quickly on the shift, as you're all aware, the shift was done through the unallotment process last year. So in the absence of the legislature adopting a shift, we will spring back to the 90% during the next biennium. With the amendment that was adopted, the A2 amendment, it limits it to 90%. So essentially, if the shift is not codified, the effect of this would be for fiscal years 10 and 11. If the shift ends up being made permanent, it would be in effect until such time as the shift returned to the 90% level. In terms of the second question about the distribution that Representative Depke asked, it's a little hard to make a guess of what the impact on all other schools and charters would be, but there is a printout in your packet that looks at the cash flow for the Metro Deaf School, presumes that their special ed payments total $3.6 million, and then says, what if the 73% shift were raised back to 90% for them? What would the effect on all other districts be? You can see from the very top line of that printout, $615,000 would be the amount of cash flow that sped up to the Metro Deaf School. That same amount of cash flow would be slowed down for all other school districts. This is just a timing issue. No revenue actually changes, but if the question were what's the cost of that revenue, this printout uses a fairly general guess at what interest rates might be, assumes a 2% borrowing rate for districts and an 8% borrowing rate for charter schools. And that last column then shows what that impact would be. So for a district like the Minneapolis district, the second one listed on your printout, if they borrowed at 2% for the delay of that $33,000, it would be about $339 for them. So relatively small impact as you look down that list on the other districts, presuming that those assumptions about interest rates are in the ballpark.
Thank you, Representative Grant.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, I want to thank Mr. Strom. I guess I haven't seen a fiscal spreadsheet where it actually says here's a guess of the impact of what it will be, but after he went through the assumptions he was forced to make, I guess that is a fair statement, so thank you, Mr. Strom. I do have a question for either Mr. Crow or Mr. Strom. Don't we have the ability in statute right now in situations like this where clearly the authors made a convincing case for why this should be a special exception? Does the Commissioner of Education and or the Commissioner of Finance have the authority to kind of implement this right now, or can you explain to us maybe what the decision-making process is?
Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, it may be best to ask the department who is here about that, but there is a provision in the payment schedule that says that if there are unanticipated events, unforeseen events, that the department can change the payment schedule, but it's probably best to ask the department.
Dr. Melcher.
Madam Chair and members, Tom Melcher with the Department of Education. The department has the ability to speed up the payment schedule within the fiscal year, but we don't have the ability to increase the percentage over the 73%. So we could, within our current authority, provide some assistance early in the fiscal year, but by the time we get to June 30th, based on the current year's data, the school would be about $300,000 short. And so we need some authority here if you wanted us to pay more than 73% during the current fiscal year.
Madam Chair.
Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair and Doctor, my understanding was that in statute that the commissioner actually did have the authority to go. Let's just assume the hypothetical is we're at 73-27 and then it's in statute. I mean, I know the unallotments complicate this, but let's just pretend for purposes of this discussion that it is in statute. My understanding was the commissioner actually could take it above. They could take money from a previous fiscal or a next fiscal year and put it into this year. Am I mistaken?
Dr. Melcher.
Madam Chair and Representative Garofalo, yes, the only authority we have currently is for school districts and charter schools that are in statutory operating debt. We are allowed to go up to 90% on the general education aid payments to them. So this would be a little similar to what we do with the school districts and statutory operating debt. Currently, but we do not have authority generally, and the legislature only appropriates enough money for us to pay 73% of the total amount of special education aid for the year. So there's just no resources to allow us to do that, and I think there's a specific provision in the payment statute that says we can't pay more than the current payment percentage with the exception of that one piece for the statutory operating debt schools.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Garofalo. I was thinking the same thing you were. I was thinking, Dr. Melcher, that there was something in there for not just statutory operating districts, but also if it would create undue hardship, like for small districts, and I always thought that would include charter schools. Isn't there something related to undue hardships, Dr. Melcher?
Madam Chair, the provision that's in the statute, 127A45, allows the department to do a cash flow advance within the year. So if the school was having problems in October because they had a bill coming in November and they couldn't borrow money, we could speed up the payment, you know, a month or two. But by the end of the fiscal year, we would have to have that resolved. And it really goes back to, is the legislature has appropriated enough money to cover 73% of the cost. So if we were to provide more than 73% for a particular school, then you either have to appropriate more money in the current fiscal year, or you have to slow down the payments to someone else. There just simply isn't enough resources there to pay anybody more than the 73%. In the case of the SOD advance, there was a special provision in statute which allowed for up to $7.5 million to be appropriated in the general education area for that purpose, but there currently isn't any authority to dip into the next year's appropriations except for that.
So that undue hardship language then applies to the current fiscal year.
It applies to speeding up within the year, but you still can't be over 73% at the end.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, to that point.
Representative Anderson.
Do you want to follow up?
Is your question to Dr. Melcher? No. Well, then let's keep you up here and go back to Representative Garofalo.
Thank you. Madam Chair, not to press this point too much, Doctor, but so is there different authority for the Commissioner of Education versus the Commissioner of Finance? Because I hear what you're saying, but I'm with the chair on this one, and I do not want to publicly say that you're wrong, because that never pans out right. But so is there different authority for the Commissioner of Finance versus the Commissioner of Education on this?
Dr. Melcher.
Madam Chair and Representative Garofalo, I'm not aware of any authority for the Commissioner of Finance to do something like this either. I may be mistaken, but I don't think there's anything out there that would allow this to happen under current law.
And Madam Chair and Dr. Melcher, I won't press this point, but I guess my understanding was this was kind of treated like a forecast appropriation. For example, if we have certain people that meet certain criteria, even though the legislature has budgeted a certain amount of money, the department or the agency has a requirement to forecast that appropriation and spend the money, even though we haven't. It's a forecast appropriation. That was my understanding, but I could be mistaken. I will go back to my little woodshed and study it up, and we'll I'll look into this, and I'll email the members of the committee as Dr. Melcher, and I'm sure that you're right. I mean,
Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, the special education is a forecast appropriation. However, there is a statute that specifically states that there is X number of dollars in total for the revenue for the year for the special education account. So we kind of fix the dollars that are available for special education. And then the payment statute says we can appropriate 73% of the money to pay those entitlements. We can only pay 73%. If we were to pay an extra $600,000 to Metro Def, if in fact there was any authority, then there would have to be some other authority to increase appropriations in the current biennium to cover that, which we don't have.
Okay. Thank you, Ben.
Thank you very much. Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Right now, this legislation applies to only one charter school. I think all charter schools are in severe financial cash flow problems. Are there other schools that are close to meeting this criteria, or is this the one and only?
Representative Mariani.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, your first point was the point I was going to make when I was going to open up, that in fact, all schools are under stress in the state of Minnesota, and they've borne the brunt of our state deficit, contrary to the opinion of some folks out there that K-12 education has not been hurt by state deficit issues. In fact, they have, and of course, charter schools have a unique situation in that, as you know, they don't have the local levy authority to potentially offset some of those issues. With this particular charter school, which you have, is the only charter school in existence with 100% special ed children. Obviously, you can make very good, and I've spoken with a number of charter school friends and allies who are, in fact, struggling And we can make all sorts of very good arguments on their behalf as well. I can only forward before this committee the truly unique nature of this particular charter school.
And Representative Anderson and staff is pointing out that we have another printout in our spreadsheet in our packets that shows the schools that qualify, and it's the Metro Deaf School and Minnesota North Star Academy that under this bill. But you can look and see the other statistics, and it gives you information about other schools. And I know that I've had been besieged, and I guess a lot of other members have as well, by charter schools in general about this shift. And these are unique schools, and there are other schools that claim to be unique as well. So that's the heartache of being on this committee when we are in the financial situation that we are in. But today we have this one before us. And if there are no other questions, then there is one more. Representative Brown.
I guess my biggest concern, and I don't know if this is a question or something that we can find out, there are a lot of good charter schools out there that do some really good work, and I do appreciate the work of this particular school. But I know, for instance, there are sobriety schools, a couple of campuses that are right now having discussions about closing, and I'm concerned about pushing some of these charter schools that do such good work, and we do need these sobriety schools, pushing them over the edge. And I guess I'm wondering if this kind of shift might cause that to happen. You know, I don't want to give the extra push that would cause some other very, very important schools that are doing good work to be pushed over the edge and cause to close campus. I think that we need to discuss that a little bit at some point.
Thank you very much. In the days that we had the shift bills, we did hear from some people, and I've definitely heard, and you have too, I'm sure, that there are schools that say they will be going under if we have this shift. So it's a serious problem. Before we go to Representative Mariani, I want to give us a time check here, because I see a lot of testifiers lined up to testify. We have one more bill. It is Representative Dabney's bill, and he thinks he can do it in 10 minutes.
I hope so. Because I'll ask Representative Barofsky.
All right, so then, members, we will, no matter where we are in this bill, we're going to have to lay it over at 10-2. Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, very quickly, to Representative Brown's appropriate point, I do want to remind members that with the amendment here, we have now focused this, specifically on and only on the special ed payments being forwarded to the school. But Madam Chair, there are some students that would like to testify. We also have our authorizer for the school, but he's willing to, I'd rather have the students testify if we're running out of time. So I'm wondering, Madam Chair, if we can hear from the students.
Very good. You're the author, Representative Mariani. Whoever you want to testify of your testifiers is, we will take them next. Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, hello, my name is Allison Porter. I live in Minneapolis, and I attend the Metro Deaf School, Minnesota North Star Academy in St. Paul as a senior. I transferred to this school my freshman year. This school has the best communication access and the best education, because this school is a bilingual school. So ASL, American Sign Language, and English are both taught as equal languages, and all classes have teachers fluent in American Sign Language. The teachers are always there to help me, supporting me, and encouraging everyone. This school has many opportunities like any high school, but because of the communication access, it's just really easier to support and encourage the students because we have direct communication. And like any other high school, we have a lot of different activities, and like theater and learning civics opportunities and representation. And this year we have our own gym, so we're able to host our prom in our very own gym, which we haven't been able to do before. So this school is really important to many of us. and we feel really lucky to have the Metro Deaf School Minnesota North Star Academy to attend. Now, my school needs help with its cash flow, or it will have to close. So really encourage you to please support House File 3404, and thank you for all the hard work you do for us.
And thank you, Ms. Porter.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Matthew Wellstad. I live in Roseville just for the school year, but actually my home is in Silver Bay, Minnesota, up in northern Minnesota. I attend Metro Deaf School, Minnesota North Star Academy, as a junior. Now, I transferred to this school during the middle of my sophomore year. And the reason that I transferred was because I'd been in mainstream programs all my life, so I was in classes with all hearing students. And I really felt like I wasn't receiving a balanced education, and I wanted to improve my English and have access to communication in all my classes. So this school has really helped me improve my academics, especially in English. And I'm also developing leadership skills at my school. In my former school, I could never do that because I was the only deaf student. So being a leader was really difficult because of communication. But now, for example, I'm a delegate for Minnesota's chapter of the Junior National Association of the Deaf. And my school also has team sports and clubs like any other high school. It's so important for my school to survive. The school has a heartwarming atmosphere, excellent education, and great social opportunities. And there really are no other schools like my school. So other schools really can't fit our needs. And if my school closed, I really can't imagine going back into a mainstream program. I would be really lonely as the only deaf kid up in northern Minnesota. So I really ask you to please support House File 3404. Metro Deaf School and Minnesota North Star Academy really need your help. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Very eloquent testimony. You did a wonderful job.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Mariani, I'll let you.
Madam Chair, I guess we should probably move on. I just want to again reiterate for the members the unique place that this school holds, not just locally, but actually statewide. I also want to reinforce that we're not doing this is a neutral impact in terms of the impact of the general fund. And we are, of course, as I mentioned earlier, only dealing with the special ed accelerated payments, not the original language as the bill was introduced. So members, I think we should work awfully hard to preserve this great asset that we have in the state of Minnesota, and look forward to the committee's deliberation and consideration of this request.
Thank you, Representative Mariani. And do you have other testifiers?
Madam Chair, we do have Justin Testerman, who's with the Volunteers for America, who's represents the authorizers. We heard from our students, and so I think, Madam Chair, that
we'll conclude. Okay. Welcome, Mr. Testerman.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Justin Testerman. I am the Director of Education Programs for Volunteers of America of Minnesota, the authorizer for Metro Deaf School and Minnesota North Star Academy. We were the nation's first nonprofit authorizer and oversee 14 schools around the state. Our authorizing program was one of 8 high-quality authorizers in the nation recognized by the U.S. Department of Education in their 2007 publication, Supporting Charter School Excellence Through High-Quality Authorizing. Volunteers of America was the original authorizer of Minnesota North Star Academy and took over as the authorizer of Metro Deaf School in 2008 when the two schools merged. These schools offer a one-of-a-kind education opportunity for deaf and hard of hearing students and their families, and the opportunity to learn in a bilingual, bicultural environment without having to leave their families for a boarding school environment. It is truly inspiring to visit the school and see students thriving for the first time in their lives in a school that is built specifically around their needs. And I think the testimony of the two students spoke to that. Both schools have remained in good standing during their time of our oversight and offer an exemplary education with strong leadership and governance. Each year, Volunteers of America of Minnesota recognizes our schools with awards for excellence in academics, financial management, and governance. Last year, we awarded Metro Deaf School Minnesota North Star Academy the Excellence in Governance Award in recognition of the thoughtful and effective efforts of the boards in navigating the difficult and complex task of merging the two schools. These schools have managed to become models of excellence in their field and have done so within a very complex and challenging funding model. We support this bill because it will provide the school with the necessary resources to continue their excellent program and mitigate the need for expensive borrowing for cash flow purposes. We thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you very much, Mr. Testerman. And I would ask you, since Volunteers of America has more than one charter school and you're only asking for this one, to just take a minute or two to talk about why you do justify only asking for this one and not your other charter schools.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As Representative Mariani spoke to a few minutes ago, all schools, not just charter schools, but are feeling the pinch of the 27% holdback, and certainly the schools that we work with are no different. This set of schools is as unique as has been already stated because they are 100% special education enrolled. And such a small portion of their funding comes from general ed, and the way that their funding model is just unique from any other school that we work with. We have schools that do have a high percentage on a relative basis of special education students, but nowhere even close to 50%, let alone 100%. And so this is a unique school, and because of that, we feel this legislative fix would help them be able to survive.
Thank you very much. I don't see anyone on the list. Any testimony for or against the bill? Representative Mariani, have you heard anything? I have not from other charter schools. We heard a kind of a microcosm with Volunteers of America having 14 schools. This obviously affects other school districts, not just charter schools, but because all charter schools are unduly affected by the shift. Have you had any others saying, what about me, what about me?
Madam Chair, I've not heard that relative to this bill. I certainly have heard from other charter schools, small schools that are particularly struggling in these days, including some thoughts that some may wind up going under by the end of this, within a short period of time. There have been some proposals out there floating around in terms of asking for help for those schools. I believe one of our colleagues may have introduced a bill to that effect, but I've not heard any sort of, why me, why not me, why you, from the other schools.
Thank you. And members, this is the kind of bill I like. Some of you who've had local bills may have heard me talk about threshold bills, where I don't like it when somebody comes in for something just for themselves, but others qualify as well, and they didn't ask for them. I always think it should be a definition of a need, and then all who qualify should get it. And this bill does meet that threshold. If there are no other... Oh, Representative Biscuits.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Do you call that the good for the goose, good for the gander policy?
Biscuits, that's what I like.
Yeah. I like that too.
Fairness, all of us who are teachers or have been teachers think that it's good for one kindergartner, they all should get it. All right, with that, House File 3404 is laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you very much, Representative Mariani.
And Madam Chair.
Representative
Garofalo. As our Representative Dabney is approaching the testifier, I just wanted everyone to know I talked with.
Madam Chair.
Representative Garofalo is.
There's a voice chiming in. I don't
know. I know it, but I've called on you, and he's going to have to. That kindergartner has to wait.
Okay, all right. So, Madam Chair, I talked with Dr. Melcher, and in this bizarro world that we're in, I was confused about why this would. I remember I was saying how this could automatically go into effect, and we were both right, but I was right if the unallotments didn't go into statute. So in this bizarro world,
if the unallotments don't go into statute, the department could shift it up to 90%, 10% on their own. However, since we know that's not going to happen, and because I prefaced my question with saying that the 7327 would be in statute, Dr. Melcher was correct. So I wanted, once again.
Representative Garofalo, it's good to know that Dr. Melcher is always right, but that you and I were sort of right.
Yeah, kind of.
Representative Benson.
Well, Madam Chair, this may be not the preview for this particular committee, but I did hear Representative Biskins talk about gender equality, and I'm just wondering how far you might carry that. A constitutional amendment, possibly?
Representative Benson, your ears are different than mine. I didn't hear anything about gender.
He said what was good for the goose was good for the gander, ma'am.
Representative Benson, you're way quicker than I am in the morning. Okay, well, with that, members, Representative Dabney, can you follow that?
I'm not even going to try, Madam Chair. I'd like to move House 2885 be before the committee, laid over for possible inclusion in the K-12 finance bill.
Representative Dabney moves House File 2885 for possible inclusion. Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Several years ago, this committee, with a lot of help from the Tax Committee, amended the statutory requirements for the language on ballots for operating levies. And simply put, it changed. Previous to that change, if you were trying to continue an existing levy, just simply renew it, the ballot language still had to include a specific statement that a yes vote on that levy would raise your property taxes, even though that wasn't exactly really the situation because it was simply a continuation of an existing property tax levy. What has come to light that we didn't, I think, fully appreciate at the time is we only did fix that, clarified the ballot language for operating levies and not for capital levies. And so House File 2885 before you simply extends that same clarification on the ballot for capital levies. Now, if you're going out to continue an existing capital levy, if this were to go into law, the ballot would not have to say you're voting to raise your property taxes because, in fact, you're simply continuing the same property tax impact as currently exists under an expiring levy. With me today, representing AMSD, is South St. Paul Superintendent Patty Hymanover.
Thank you, Representative Dabney. Welcome, Superintendent Hymanover.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Patty Hymanover, Superintendent at South St. Paul. And we ran into a situation a couple years ago, and this is a personal story for South St. Paul, and I do hope that no other school district will have to experience what we did. In 2008, the school district decided to go out 1 year early to revoke our existing capital project referendum for technology. But at that point, what we did is ask for a slight increase. So we knew what the ballot language was going to be. The problem is it did fail. And what we did is go out for a community survey to find out why it failed. And it was amazing, the results, because there were 80% of the community that was going to support the referendum if there was no increase. So the fall of 2009, we did exactly what our community asked, is we were going out for a current capital project referendum with no increase. We knew we had the support moving forward until Tom Deans, our attorney, contacted us when he was drafting our ballot and said, what you will need to put on your ballot is by voting yes on this ballot question, you are voting for a property tax increase. That was a huge blow for our district because we honestly thought that we were able to put the ballot language by voting yes on this ballot question, you are voting to extend an existing property tax referendum that is scheduled to expire. So, without a doubt, this was a huge setback. And certainly it complicated our message. I have worked so hard to try to convince the public that we are going for a renewal. But when you get to the ballot, it's going to say this. The good news is It did pass. The bad news is it only passed by 55%. We knew we had the support going out there. We asked for our feedback from our community and said, what happened? They said the ballot was way too confusing. You said one thing. We know that. We didn't know if we were getting tricked when we got to the ballot and voted. We didn't want to get our taxes increased. What the funny part is that because this is based off of net tax capacity, our referendum, our taxes for our community was actually going to be lower this year than the previous year. Now try to put that in there in the formulation and trying to explain all this. It becomes very complicated. So we really strongly support House File Number 2885, and I think we need to simplify the ballot, and I do not want this to happen to any other school district to have to go through this. So please support this.
Thank you, Ms. Dr. Hemenover. Any questions from members? Any testimony? Representative Dabney.
It's Mr. Dean's fault.
If they wouldn't have put that on the ballot, Representative Dabney, if it hadn't been for him,
yeah.
We would.
Madam Chair, in all seriousness, I think this just clarifies for voters, and it assures that what I'm voting on as a voter is clear and understandable to me. Then I ask for member support.
Very good. And Representative Dabney, the longer we talk, of course, and we still have time, now we do have a couple members.
Right.
So Representative Dietrich and then Representative McFarland. Representative Dietrich.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Dabney, on line 2.13 of your bill, it says proposing a new project at the same maximum tax rate. Does that mean that this language would apply to a totally new project if you were doing... And just because it is not an increase in taxes, that you could use that language?
Representative Dabney.
Madam Chair, Representative Dietrich, as I understand it, provided you have an expiring capital referendum and you're bringing in a new one at the same rate, it's clear to the voters that this is not an increase in your property taxes. It is a continuation of the same tax rate.
Representative McFarland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Madam Chair. Representative Dabney, could you give me a definition of capital projects? I always think of like a building or something tangible. I know now technology and buying those kinds of things are included, but are you saying that if somebody wanted to do a building project, they wouldn't have to say there was an increase?
Representative Dabney.
Madam Chair, Representative McFarland, again, if you've got an expiring, this only comes into play if you have an expiring capital levy. So if you went out 5 years ago for a 20-year capital levy to build a new high school, and that is continuing, and now you're coming in with a technology proposal, this language would not apply because you would not that first levy would not be expiring. So you have to have a levy that is expiring for this to and be proposing the same amount for this language to come into play.
And maybe Representative Dabney, we should have Mr. Strom explain the
difference. Oh, I think that would be an excellent idea.
Debt service and capital levy.
Thank you.
So, Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, Representative McFarland, there are three kinds of levies that require a vote. The debt service levy is the general one that districts use for building projects, and this is not that. This is the levy for capital projects that used to be called the down payment levy. And essentially what happens here is for a limited capital project, for a period not to exceed 10 years, the board may go to the voters and ask them to approve that particular project, a referendum for that particular project. So it's generally not for buildings. It's generally for, and we could have the superintendent address what they do in South St. Paul, but generally the buildings are done through the debt service levy and not the capital projects.
And thank you. I think that it's a good thing we're taking a little longer because I think we should want to discuss this. So let's have the superintendent, if you could tell us what South St. Paul did use this for, because I think some of us did have in mind buildings, and we're not used to meeting at this time, so we're thinking debt service. So Superintendent Hemenover.
Madam Chair, the The referendum was used to for the infrastructure of our technology. It was $650,000 for 10 years is what we were asking. Also, it is to update our computers so we can do the testing appropriately that is required, and also the software. This is all incorporated and embedded into our curriculum, so it's not a standalone technology. And it is also, like I said, the infrastructure. The money that is being used goes directly to our kids.
Very good. Thank you. Representative Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And to renew this levy, would it have to be for the same number of years, or could it be shorter, or would it be longer? If it was longer, you probably would have a tax increase then.
Representative Dabney.
Madam Chair, Representative Detmer, I appreciate your point on length of levy, but I think the question is the amount of property tax the taxpayer is paying each year would not vary based on continuing the levy.
And Representative Detmer, if it was continuing but it was ending and they didn't continue, then of course it would be a tax decrease. But it's a net continuing on if they choose to have a vote and pass it again.
Madam Chair, just to that point too. So if you have a 10-year currently at $650,000, so if you could renew that, would it be for another 10 years, or would you stipulate how many years that would be for?
Madam Chair, I'm going to throw that technical question to staff if they could.
Mr. Strzok.
Madam Chair, these projects are a little different than the operating referendum, and part of the challenge was to make this language parallel. And the decision was made to make it parallel based on the tax rate. So really what it's keying off of is that the tax rate is the same, because essentially it's going to be a new project, because these are adopted on a project-by-project basis. So even if it's a continuation of the same project, it's a new project. So, for example, if a district were to go to the voters and say, we'd like to buy some computer technology to update our computer labs, 10 years later, when they ask the question again, it's a different project, even if it's for the same purpose. So in some ways, it's an all-new project, unlike the operating referendum, where no project or purpose is listed. Rather, it's a dollars per pupil that's approved. So because this is keying off the tax rate, that's essentially the thing that doesn't change. So if there were a change in tax base or something like that, there could be a variant amount in the project, could be for a different number of years as well. But the rate is what's got to be constant in order for this language to apply.
And the current law not to exceed 10 years would still apply. So it couldn't go past 10 years, but it could be shorter, and that number isn't in statute. Representative Garofalo?
Well, Madam Chair, I was going to offer to translate because I speak Republican, but it sounds like we figured it, so it's okay.
Representative Garofalo, apparently Mr. Strom and I do too. So,
Mr. Strom does, I don't know.
Maybe you're right about that. Although I noticed yesterday, you voted the Democrat Party line, and I voted the Republican Party line. Let the record reflect that. I think Representative Dabney has given his closing statement, so if there are no more comments or questions, Representative Dabney renews his motion that 2885 be laid over for possible inclusion, and the meeting is adjourned. Oh, wait, it's not adjourned. We're going to have to do the minutes. And Representative Benson, would you move the minutes?
Madam Chair, I'd like to move the minutes for March 18th, 2010.
For March 18th by Representative Benson. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The minutes are approved. And now the meeting is adjourned.